Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it, Hail Varsity on a Wednesday. Chris Schmidt not in the studio today, but I am Elijah Herbal, and I will be running the show today. You can follow me on Twitter at Herbal Essences or follow the show at Hail Varsity or at ESPN Lincoln for some sound bites. We're going to start it off with a good interview Chris had yesterday with Grant Wistrom. Grant gets into some good stuff, and Chris may not be in the studio, but we still get to hear his lovely voice today.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, a Super Bowl champ, a national champion three times over, college football and Nebraska Hall of Famer. We say hi to Grant Wistrom. Grant, what are you doing, man?
About the same thing I'm doing every time I think we talk. I'm sitting out in front of my kid's school waiting to pick them up. I really don't know if I'd do anything else.
How's the traffic? Is it a free-flowing setup, or are you gridlocked?
No, I try to get here early enough that I can peel out pretty quick. My son has a routine down. He doesn't like to be at school any longer than he has to, so he's usually one of the first ones out. So it can get a bit hairy, but we've kind of got a good program down, and we get out of here pretty quickly.
The escape route, well planned by Grant Wistrom. I like it. So I need a letter grade from you, Grant, on the black shirts, the Adidas alternative jerseys that at some point Nebraska will wear this year, an ode to your crew, those black shirts. What do you think?
I think they look pretty awesome, man. I get maybe a little hesitation, you know, everybody wearing the black shirt on their shoulder, but at some point, man, everybody's got to have a little black shirt in them. And I know our offense does. I know the guys love to fight on the other side of the ball, so we'll let them wear it a couple times a year.
What does it mean to have a little black shirt in them?
Oh, man, I don't think we have enough time here, Schmitty, to sum it all up, but just you're never out of the fight. You're always swinging. I don't care how many times you get knocked down. You pick yourself back up. Just at the end of the game, the other guy knows that he's been in a street fight. You know, hopefully we come out on top, but at the end of it all, you're going to have respect for me because I'm going to do my best to just punish you on every snap and just beat you into submission. And, you know, I really think Scott thinks the same way. I think he wants his offense to have that same sort of mentality. So, you know, if it's good enough for us on the defensive side of the ball and they get a chance to wear it and they can wear it with pride and earn it, I'm fine with it, man.
A few minutes, Grant Wistrom with us, Hail Varsity Radio. That's a great answer. And, you know, what's your outlook for 2019? I'm not asking for a win total, but what do you think year two is going to bring?
Improvement. You know, I don't think there's any doubt there's going to be improvement. You know, I want to temper my excitement a little bit. Everything, you know, I'm down here in Southwest Missouri, so I don't have a line to the program like you do, Schmitty. But, you know, everything I read on social media and everything I'm hearing, the men have put in work in the off season. They deserve to expect to win. You know what I mean? They've earned the right to feel that way, I think. So, I think they'll take the field with a lot more confidence this year, having another year under Coach Shenander and Scott. So we're going to have a better football team out there for sure. But the only thing that matters to me is just seeing men out there that take pride. And I say it every time I'm on with you. Take pride in the uniform. Take pride in playing for the University of Nebraska. Care about playing for each other. And if they do that, it's going to be an amazing season.
When and where did you get that confidence to perform and grow as a player? When you got to Lincoln, you played as a freshman. Along your journey, when did it click for you?
You know, I think it started for me in high school.
Okay.
You know, and not that, but just that mentality, but just the fact that I'm here, I'm going to show up every day, I'm going to bust my ass, I'm going to put in 100%, and whatever happens, happens. But it's not, if I don't get the starting job, or if I'm not, you know, a big role player, if I'm not a factor on the team, it's not going to be because I wasn't working hard enough to earn that. That was never going to be an issue. I was always going to outwork everybody else on the field. And that was something that started in high school. You know, and looking back, you know, knowing that I was going to play in the NFL, I probably, maybe I had the potential or the athletic ability to throttle back a little bit in high school and get back on, get by on athletic ability. But I never felt that way. I always played with a chip on my shoulder that I had something to prove every time I stepped on the field. You know, and that started in high school. It was enhanced at the University of Nebraska when I got to play for Coach McBride. And just there, learning to play for the guys around you. And, you know, that was also enhanced by, you know, my love for Jason and, you know, my love for my other teammates. And that is a big factor. When you care about the guys you're going to battle with, you play harder. You play for each other. I could take a play off and look myself in the mirror and probably be all right with it. But I couldn't take a play off and look Jason in the eyes afterwards because I care about Jason. I love Jason. I don't want to let him down or any of the other guys out there on the field with me. So it started in high school, but just along the way it was enhanced. And I've said it before, I've been really blessed about being at the right place at the right time, whether it was in high school or college or the NFL. So I know that, you know, I've been really fortunate to be around a lot of great players and a lot of great coaches that have just bought into that same type of mentality and really reinforced it in me. And it truly made the teams that I was on, it took them from good to great. You know, it took me from a good player to a better player. So it works, that mentality. When you care about, take pride in what you're doing, care about the men you're out there with, it translates to wins. And the way that Scott leads just reinforces that on his players. They love him. They love each other. They're going to go out on that field and play for each other on, you know, next Saturday. And you're going to be like that every Saturday from here on out.
You just touched on what gave you motivation. You clearly outlined the accountability. You had self-policing. You had a standard you set for yourself, but you had teammates that also made sure everyone was accountable. That's key, and I think that's what Scott's continuing to build. When it comes to toughness, that's something that I took from him in Chicago with media days. He wants to see his guys be tough every game. Easy to say, hard to do. You guys in the 90s were a tough unit. The offense was tough. The defense was tough. You made each other better. Where did you get your toughness from? Is it your folks? Was it a coach? Was it McBride? Was it your teammates? How are you tougher than the next guy? Because you outlasted a lot of folks. You had talent. But when push came to shove, you were one of the few, the last men standing.
You know, there's definitely men all along and teammates and people that have helped enhance that all along the way. But I give all of the credit to my dad when it comes to that. He deserves it all, man. He never let us settle for second best. He was the first person in line to tell us great job when we did something that was worthy of that. But he was also the first person in line to tell us that was dog crap, whatever we just did. And he earned the right to say that. I mean, he poured into, like, everybody knows Tracy, and Tracy played at Nebraska, but I have an older brother, Chance, too, that played at a Division II school in Missouri. And he poured into us every day as kids. And we were his only friends. I mean, the poor guy doesn't have any friends now because we were the only ones he had growing up because he was constantly coaching us or being around us or being a part of our lives. So that mentality, that toughness came from my dad. And when I didn't demonstrate it, he was the first one to check me on it. And I thank God. I mean, I can think of a handful of moments of conversations we had or interactions that we had that were defining moments for me that was like, okay, that wasn't satisfactory. That wasn't up to par. I've got to raise my game. And I've taken those lessons on with me, but it all started with my dad. And but once again, being in the right place at the right time around a lot of great coaches and a lot of great players. I mean, Christian Peter, Terry Keneally, Jason Pesterfield, all on the D line when I came in as a freshman. Those guys are all hard-working, tough guys, and to see them doing it every day, there was no other alternative. You just did what they did.
How did they mentor you? I know they did it with their actions. When it came to their words or counsel, how did they connect with you and show you the way, kind of take you under their wing?
You know, it was more just observation and watching them. You know, it wasn't, you know, there wasn't any kumbaya moments with any of those guys, I promise you.
I don't think so.
But no. But it was mainly just by watching how they worked, how much pride they took in their job, how much pride they took in just busting their ass in the weight room, on the practice field, taking pride in playing for Coach McBride and Coach Osborne, and wearing the uniform and the black shirts. It's, you know, watching them and the respect that they had for the place where they were in life, and me coming on as a peon freshman, there was just no other alternative. It was just the standard was set, and I had no other choice but to follow that standard, and I did it willingly. And you know, hopefully carried that standard, maybe elevated it some with Jason, and, you know, tried to push the envelope even a little bit further.
Who did you mentor? You had a string of defensive ends after you that played in the league. Nebraska recruited exceptionally well, but the culture was at a very, very high level. Who did you reach out to, if anybody, that you tried to show and talk to?
You know, I was really, Chad Kelsey is still a dang good friend of mine. We're pretty kind of cut from the same cloth. So, you know, it was easy connecting with Chad. Kyle Vandenbosch was another guy. I'm not claiming any of Kyle's success. He took the whole, you know, the defensive end and just, I think, elevated, especially at the professional level. And that guy was a guy that really needed no mentoring. He came in from day one acting like he'd been there before. So, you know, and for me, it wasn't, there weren't any kumbaya moments for me either. You know, at that point in my career, it was like either you're with us or you're against us. And if they were not with us, they were clearly against us, and they weren't welcome. And so either you bought in or you worked yourself out of it really quickly.
Grant Wistrom, a couple of minutes left here, Hail Varsity Radio. Grant, always love chatting with you. Thanks for the time on this. And I wanted to ask you about expectations, and I know we touched on kind of the outlook a little bit ago. Were you guys able to walk that fine line with confidence but not being overconfident? That's one thing I'm wondering about this team. I think they're good enough to have success, but handling that success, Nebraska has not been at a high level for a while.
I don't see that being an issue, man. So just to start your question up, like, it was never, we won the Big Eight, or yeah, we won a national championship. It was like, okay, what's next?
Okay.
You know, there was never any moment where anyone was ever satisfied. You know, as soon as we won a national championship, you come back, you have the parade, you have all that stuff, and we were back to work. You know, it wasn't like, hey, let's sit back and enjoy this. It was like, no, we got to suit back up and do this again. And I don't anticipate, you know, with a win or two coming their way, these guys, they want to win. You know, the coaches are winners. They're not going to be satisfied with a 7-win season, I don't think. So, you know, if they go out and get a few wins early, I probably would expect Coach Frost to be a little bit harder on the guys. You know, keep the heads in check. You know, probably not talking as glowingly in the media about his team as one might if, you know, at that position after having a string of unsuccessful seasons. Trying to keep him from getting a big head, knowing that, like, guys, that's great. We won 4 games, 5 games, 6 games in a row, but what's the end game? What's the goal? Is it to be an 8-win season, to be above 500, or is it to compete for a Big Ten championship? If that's your goal, it doesn't matter what we did last week. It's what are we going to do this week? That game is irrelevant at this point. We learn from our mistakes, and now when we suit up on this Saturday, it's all about what we're going to do right now, because the past does not matter.
Big matchup, week 2 against Colorado. What Nebraska-Colorado mean to you?
Oh, that's funny. I was actually just reliving that earlier today with somebody. but
oh, really?
Man, yeah. Actually, yeah. I love playing. Colorado is the best stadium to play in when you're on the road. Just the fans being right on top of you, the animosity between the fans and the players. It, when we played out there my senior year maybe, mm-hmm. might have been my senior year, we about had a brawl between the fans and Jason and I on the sideline. I mean, it got intense.
Okay, stop there. Set the scene. What's happening? Are people throwing beer bottles at you or what?
No. Somebody said something unfavorable about Christian, yelled it at Jason. Sure. Jason yelled something unfavorable back to them about their daughter.
Wow.
And, yeah, and people started coming over the railing. And it was exciting. I was really hoping somebody would actually put their foot on the field. Things like that, getting, one-fingered waves from 80-year-old women as you're driving into the stadium. It's awesome. I love playing in Boulder. I'm jealous I'm not going to be out there because it, with all the hype coming in around that game and just the bad blood, the history between the programs of Adrian getting hurt last year, it is going to be a street fight, and I'm really sorry I'm not going to be out there in the mix.
Well, Grant, we're going to be set up in Boulder. We'll FaceTime you if we need reinforcements. How's that sound?
Please do, man.
Grant, good to get caught up, man. Thanks for the time.
Anytime, Schmitty.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome! We're back on Hail Varsity Radio. Elijah Herbel here in the studio. Schmidt cannot make it in today, so I'm running the show. Coming up next, we're going to be bringing in Derek Peterson from Hail Varsity. Derek, how are we doing on a Wednesday?
It's good, man. We are, I think, 10 days away from football.
10
so
days, yeah, 10 days.
Excited about that. Want to give a quick, I guess, I'm thinking about Chris and his family. Hope everything's going okay there. So a little bit of good and a little bit of down.
Now, the big news for the day from the Huskers is the commitment of three-star running back Savion Morrison. What can you tell me about him?
Well, if you're talking about recruiting guys that fit this offense to a T, if you're talking about fit over recruiting rankings, that's Savion Morrison. I think, the immediate thing that jumps out, he's 5'11", he's 188, he's a little bit on the smaller side, so he's probably going to need to add a little bit of weight when he gets here. But you watch his tape. I mean, his huddle film, his huddle highlights from his junior year was 10 minutes long, which is ridiculous. And then you look at some of the numbers he's got. He had 2,700 rushing yards as a junior, 38 total touchdowns. I think he was over 3,000 all-purpose yards as a junior in high school. His goal, as he told Greg Smith, Greg has got a couple pieces up on HailVarsity.com about him, but one of his goals for his senior year is to have 75 total touchdowns at the end of the year, which would be just absolutely absurd. But he had 38 this past season, which is absurd in its own right. He seems to have a good vision. He seems to have got some really good feet. When he's in tight windows, he can sort of see where the play is going to develop and see where he needs to get to in order to break some big runs. Nebraska needs guys who cannot just, see the hole and find their way to the second level, but once they get to the second level, who can take it to distance and who can turn, a 10 or a 15-yard run into a 40, 50, 60-yard touchdown. The hope is that's Savion Morrison. He's a guy who not only can he run the ball pretty well, but he can catch it out of the backfield, and he can be sort of that all-purpose back. And, to that effect, that was one of the things that he told Greg Smith that was really appealing to him about Nebraska. It was just the way that Nebraska uses their running backs. They can, I had a story, I think a week ago now, all these days are jumbling together, about the death lineup and that Nebraska can just put guys all over the field. You can put Wanda Robinson in the backfield. You can put Maurice Washington out wide at wide receiver. And that kind of interchangeability within this offense is something that is seemingly appealing to a guy like Savion Morrison. He talked about the ability to go from the slot, to go into the backfield, to be able to do sort of perimeter option stuff, be able to do screen stuff, and not just be, you know, a guy that's running up the middle, crashing into the line of scrimmage. So from that standpoint, he is a hand-in-glove fit with what they want to do. It's funny to me that this is the third guy now that has come out of Oklahoma that Nebraska's gone in and pulled talent out of the state. And none of the, I think Damarian Houston was the only one of the three that had an offer from Oklahoma State. None of them had OU offers, which is, OU has a little bit of an excuse because they can go get talent anywhere. But OSU not offering these kids is crazy. You know, some people might look at that and say, oh, this is not talent that Nebraska's getting. No, this is serious talent that Nebraska's pulling out of the state of Oklahoma, and they've sort of made it an emphasis on the recruiting trail to go get sort of an under-recruited state because of the fact that Oklahoma can go anywhere and OSU doesn't. I don't really know what OSU's doing, but they've kind of made it a goal, and you know, Ryan Helms doing a really, really good job loading up this running back room.
Dr. Petey with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Find him, follow him on Twitter at Dr. Petey HV. And Derek, you are from Oklahoma as well. Do you think it is more difficult for a team like Nebraska to go in and pull from Oklahoma? Is there the loyalty to the home state like there is here in Nebraska?
It's different because, you know, the state of Oklahoma has OU, or you're an OSU fan, or you grow up, you know, close to Texas. Close to Tulsa. I don't know too many kids that grew up like Tulsa Golden Hurricane fans, but there's that Division I program there as well. There's three of them in the state, but really the two big ones. And whereas Nebraska, it's just Nebraska football here. I don't think it's difficult to go into the state and pull talent out. I mean, it's a state that has talent. It's a state where, you know, Oklahoma State really should focus on locking down the borders of the state. OU can go. I mean, they pulled, I think, two or three five-star wide receivers in the last recruiting cycle. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can go, because of Lincoln Riley and because of what they've done the last couple of years, they can go outside the state and really, I mean, they could ignore the state if they wanted to. So it's open for somebody to come in and take it. It's open for somebody like Nebraska to come in and really establish a firm pipeline if they wanted to. And it seems like that's something that Ryan held. I mean, obviously he has JUCO experience in the region coaching, and he knows people in the region, and it's an area that he feels comfortable going into and pulling kids out of. And you know, you look at the three that they've got, Damarian Houston and Jamie Nance in the last cycle. I'm really high on Jamie Nance. And Savion Morrison is, he looks like he could be another really, really good running back, not just for this scheme, not just a system player, but just a really good running back. So I don't think it's necessarily difficult to go into that state and to compete with a school like Oklahoma State, especially if Nebraska, I mean, all this stuff that Nebraska's doing, they're going into Georgia, they're going into Oklahoma, they're going places where they haven't recruited well over the last however many years, but they're doing it and having success off back-to-back 4-8 seasons. So, like, if this thing gets up and running the way everybody kind of thinks it will in the near future, I mean, it's not going to be hard for them to go into any state, really, and pull kids.
And, I mean, I think a lot of that comes down to just Ryan Held as a recruiter. Morrison said in the press conference after he committed, he said, "I love Coach Held. That's like a best friend to me." What can be said for the job that Coach Held has done recruiting around the country?
I mean, he's one of the best recruiters. If not in this conference, he's one of the best recruiters across college football. I mean, you can start with the work ethic. And just the sheer amount of time that he puts into evaluating. I mean, a lot has been and will continue to be made about the number of offers that Nebraska sends out, but Nebraska doesn't just, like, spray and pray with their offers. It's not just they're just throwing things out willy-nilly after seeing a kid one time. Like, there's a lot of legwork that gets put into offering a kid, and Ryan Held is, if he's not the lead, he's helping on, I mean, as many kids as he can possibly help on. And and the work that gets put in by him on the recruiting trail. I mean, he is the way that he has reshaped this running back room is a story in its own right. But these guys cross recruit. They don't just recruit for their position. They recruit a lot by region. And Ryan Held helps with a number of guys that aren't going to be in his room when he gets here. And that's kind of something that they like to do. It establishes relationships across the coaching staff that really helps kids when they're transitioning in. And I mean, I think 247 does a ranking of recruiters. And I think Ryan Held is just annually underrated in that regard.
Derek Peterson, Hail Varsity's own, with us on Hail Varsity Radio today, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Derek, couple minutes left, and we're 10 days out from the first game. Nebraska starting prep for South Alabama today. What was the vibe at practice today?
Oh, there's a little bit of talk about, you know, you've kind of hit the grind stage of fall camp and guys needing to fight through, and a little bit of talk of, you know, guys are just ready for the football season to get here. Guys are ready to hit some people. You know, there were comments made by Frost, I think, last week that were to the effect of, you know, I keep waiting for a dip in energy, and there hasn't really been a dip in energy. That's a good sign that these guys are continuing to show up to practice each day with a workmanlike approach. You know, they're saying all the right things. Chenander talked about on Monday, was it, when we talked to the defense, either Monday or Tuesday, the days are running together.
It happens during fall camp.
Yeah, it's a grind, I'm telling you. He was talking about the AP poll coming out and Nebraska being ranked, and you know, there was a lot of hubbub about, you know, back to back 4-18 getting ranked in a preseason poll, and he said, look, like it's cool, but we have to go out and earn it, and it doesn't mean anything to me right now. I think the phrase that he used was diddly. And that's sort of been the approach of a lot of the team. There's a lot of excitement, but you know, they feel like they have to go earn it. They feel like they have to prove that they're not the team that began last season 0-6.
Derek, about 2 minutes left before we got to go to break, so I got to get your opinion. What do you think about these new black alternates Nebraska rolled out?
They're great. They're so great. Nebraska need. I wish the pants would have been black as well, but I will take black when I can get black. I like that the helmet also has a black N, and I see that has sort of been a sticking point with some traditionalists amongst the fan base, at least from what I've seen on social media. But if a guy like Grant Wistrom loves it, then anybody that is complaining about it suddenly has their opinion invalidated.
Oh, I personally love those black ends. What do you feel about the black shirt logo on the shoulder? Because that's going to be worn by offensive players as well.
I don't see an issue with that. I think it's great. I think this is the first time they've actually put the black shirt logo on a jersey, is it not?
It is.
Yeah, that's awesome. They need to embrace that. They need to, you know, if you're trying to get back to that tradition, if you're trying to get back to being a team with a feared defense, like, you need to embrace that tradition. You need to live it up. You need to hype it up a little bit. And I think if the defense goes out, like, let's say that these things are worn, for a night game that just happens to be against Ohio State. Like, just wearing that is going to add to whatever emotion the players are feeling before they come out to that game, particularly the defense, because they're going to want to live up to the reputation that is on their shoulder. I think it's a great move.
Do you think there's any games that the athletic department might have in mind for these jerseys to be rolled out?
I think Ohio State's probably a big one. I think that might be a circled one. I don't. That's speculation. I'm not reporting anything.
Oh yeah.
But I do think, though, like, every time there's an alternate, and teams across the country do this, when there's an alternate jersey announced, usually there's a date announced for when that alternate is going to be worn. Nebraska's done that in the past. There wasn't a date announced for this one. Does that mean that they're going to wear these multiple times?
That's what I think, and I think it may be over multiple years, but I don't know.
Because I kind of feel like they're going to wear these multiple times. And I kind of feel like this is maybe like a stopgap for something. I mean, Frost is from the Phil Knight, Oregon, bunch of uniforms, bunch of cool stuff, bunch of, you know, you've got swappability with your looks. And that was kind of something that he brought to UCF when he got there. I kind of feel like he wants some of that stuff here with Nebraska. And so I'm curious if we get sort of a regularly reoccurring black shirt alternate. I wonder if the pants are black moving forward. I hope they are. But I kind of agree with you that this will be sort of a thing that sticks moving forward. I'm really curious what games they wear them in. The Ohio State one seems like one that you would circle. Maybe the Wisconsin one, just because of the ties between the two programs there. Or, Iowa at home on Black Friday, depending on how the season is shaking out, maybe that's a game that has the Big Ten West division title implications. Black shirt jerseys on a Black Friday game against Iowa would be pretty cool.
Thanks for the time, Derek. Coming up next on Hail Varsity Radio, Mike Schuhart from Wilderness Ridge.
402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm great, Chris. How are you guys?
We're getting ready, man. Football season is going to be here, and still some hot races in Major League Baseball. Your defending World Series champs, though, a major blow with Chris Sale, the ace, expected to miss the remainder of the regular season. That left elbow injury expected to avoid Tommy John surgery. And he got a second opinion from someone you're familiar with, Dr. James Andrews. What's the situation here with Sale? What's going on with his elbow?
Yeah, you know, pretty common. I think the big fear here, at least initially, was obviously Tommy John type injury, especially with some of the complaints that he was putting out there. You know, they did an MRI for him back in Boston, and actually it sounded like it was kind of unclear what the MRI showed. You know, definitely nothing definitive in terms of an injury to the ligament. At least that's what they had reported. So he goes and sees Andrews, you know, for a second opinion. And just in discussing that with Andrews and kind of the information that I'm kind of getting that's out there just in the news, I didn't discuss this with Andrews. It looks like, you know, more kind of elbow inflammation issues, very common, especially this time of the year for those major league guys, just all the wear and tear in the elbow. But basically they're talking about elbow inflammation. I would assume with the amount of time they're going to give him for some rest and the fact that they did a PRP injection, this is probably a partial kind of injury, maybe a small tear of that ulnar collateral ligament, which that's kind of the Tommy John ligament, either a little stretch injury to it. It's obviously nothing substantial, kind of based on what they're saying. But that's at least kind of the early reports of it. Obviously, it sounds good that it might not need any surgery for it, which is good for Chris Sale.
Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Chris Sale. So you have some pitchers, and you had Tanaka for New York deal with some platelets, some of that PRP biologistics that he went with, and that helped avoid surgery. Let's go there from a non-operative option standpoint for Sale here. He's had inflammation. He's had soreness, right? The MRI is different now than when he had it earlier this year. There's been change with his elbow. So how, in fact, does the PRP side of things heal? Take me through that side of it, if you could, because that's an option that is out there.
Yeah, absolutely. A great question. So just to kind of review on that, we've talked about this before in the show. You know, PRP, we kind of use that short term, but platelet-rich plasma is kind of the definitive term to describe that. And essentially what it is we take out the patient's blood, just a venous blood draw, put it into a centrifuge, and then there's some chemicals or enzymes, if you will, that are part of this solution that you use, and then you spin it down and it forms kind of a layer on top that we essentially use to inject into an injured area into the body. The goal of that is to arrive at getting a thing called platelet-derived growth factor, which essentially is a growth factor that you carry around inside your body that helps things to basically simply to help things heal. And so you want to take and use that material, inject it into an injured area. The whole concept here is tendons, ligaments, they do not have great blood supply. And so we're trying to do something to boost that healing of that area. Since there's not great blood supply, we want to, you know, provide direct access to that platelet-derived growth factor right into where that injury is. And so that's kind of the concept behind it. And so for using it for ligament, tendon type injuries, chronic kind of tendonitis type problems, it's kind of a perfect fit for that. And so in his situation, what they would do is, you know, they pull his blood out, go through that process, spin it down, and then you basically would inject along that ligament, that Tommy John ligament, with the hope of either A, getting some healing maybe over a scar tissue type area, or if it looks like he's had kind of some stretching of the tissue, some healing there. If it looks more like kind of a chronic kind of tendonitis type picture, again, kind of same concept, to get the platelet-derived growth factor in the area to promote some healing and improve some of the immune factors in the area. And that's essentially what you're trying to do, kind of somewhat of a similar concept if you're using stem cells. Sometimes they'll put those in there along with the platelet-derived or PRP, platelet-derived growth factor, our platelet-rich plasma. And that's essentially the goal of utilizing that. The issue always with that kind of material is just the data behind it. Unfortunately, the studies are not completely conclusive on, yes, this is, you know, amazing, let's use this. The studies are a bit mixed, and so that's kind of the big issue with, you know, at least using it mainstream, is the studies are kind of mixed, and so it's hard to get insurance on board to do that. Obviously, at the professional level, major league level, they basically utilize whatever they want to use and not necessarily worry about the insurance side of it.
I look at sales numbers here, and I mean, he's 6-11, 4.40 ERA. He has the best strikeouts and a great strikeout-to-walk ratio, so he's got control. He's striking batters out, but people have tagged him for 24 home runs. That's up 60% compared to his career average. He's just been getting slapped around. He still can get you out with some heat, and he isn't walking people, so they're earning the runs off of him. What's that say to you about what he's dealing with when it comes to his stuff? He can still get movement, apparently, but when it comes to just the sizzle on his fastball or the movement on his pitch, he's been really one arm behind his back, it sounds like, this year.
Yeah, you know, good question, and probably multifactorial. But, you know, just looking at it from the sports medicine standpoint, knowing what I know about elbow injuries and our throwers, you do worry about, you know, is that ligament starting to break down? You start to worry about, you know, some of the ligament losing some of its tension, gaining a little bit more laxity, kind of losing that ability kind of to snap the arm through and you know, increase the kind of movement your fastball has. The velocity could be an issue. So you worry about some of those things. You also worry a little bit about some of the control. Is he, you know, having to compensate and change his arm angle, which either A, is making it easier for the hitters to kind of read the pitch coming off, or understanding that, hey, when he changes his arm angle to this level, he's going to throw this certain type of pitch. So you wonder if some of those things are occurring as a result of this ligament starting to break down. And that's really the big question mark for him, because he has been different this year for sure. The other side note to that is, so, you know, here you are trying this non-operative treatment using the PRPs, and the press was quick to rush to, hey, this sounds like it's not going to need surgery. You know, there's probably still a potential here that might still be on the radar.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Elijah Herbel back here on Hail Varsity Radio. Find me, follow me on Twitter at Herbal Essences, or follow the show at Hail Varsity on Twitter. Chris Schmidt out of the studio today. I called a bit of an audible there. We were going to have Mike Schuhart, the Wilderness Ridge Golf Pro, in. Decided we're going to try to get him in for the second hour instead. We're now wrapping up this first hour as Nebraska now 10 days away from the first game. Today, Nebraska began game prep for the South Alabama week. I've heard that South Alabama game described as that team being one of the worst in the country, and they ended up losing a lot this offseason, meaning that hopefully for the Huskers, they should be able to do a lot of what they want against South Alabama. It should be a tune-up going into Colorado. Let's hear from Coach Mario Verduzco after practice today as he talks about shifting from a camp mentality into a game week mentality.
For us, it's a heck of a lot easier because during camp, you know, Frosty, I mean, the whole playbook's open from day to day, and, you know, when he's calling plays, it gets wild now. And so everything's available to us. Then in game week, things get whittled down. You know, it's not as much volume, so it's much simpler for us.
Again, that was Mario Verduzco on what the team is doing now as they transition from a camp setting into a scenario preparing for the first game against South Alabama. He also touched later on Adrian Martinez and the quarterback situation. Verduzco, obviously the quarterback's coach out at the University of Nebraska. Let's take a listen to what he has to say about how Adrian Martinez did during this camp.
It's been really good. He started off where he left from spring, and even more so. He's been doing really, really, really well. It's just everything, the command he has. Defense now, more comfortable with everything we're doing. Very similar to my experience with KZ down at UCF, you know, protections, identifying things. Does he miss things? Yeah, he does every now and then. Young cat's a sophomore, but that part of it, I'm just more comfortable, you can tell.
He went on to talk about what Adrian has added so far in camp. Let's take a listen to that before we end the hour.
Well, from an effective domain standpoint, just the leadership part of it, you know, Coach Frost wanted to accelerate that, and that was the challenge to Adrian, and I feel pretty good about the fact that he met Coach Frost's expectations. From the psychomotor standpoint, just in terms of his stroke, he's added more juice on the ball. Part of that is due to the work just from the mass that he's gained from with Coach Duvall, but in regards to all the drills. Cognitive standpoint, you know, he's just got a better understanding and mastery of the playbook. The challenge from that standpoint now is to make certain that he's on the same page with Coach Frost during the course of a game in terms of when plays are called or plays are changed or something's added that we hadn't rehearsed. He knows exactly what Coach Frost wants. I just see myself as a conduit between those two cats, and it's really important for him to get there, right?
I think one of the big things that Verduzco touches on there is Adrian adding a little more zip on his ball. I think that was lacking at times last year. When you go back and watch some of the film, he didn't necessarily have the arm strength that you expect to see from a Division I college quarterback. But then you see pictures of him coming this offseason, and his arms just look huge. I'm excited to see what Adrian can do coming up this coming football season. Again, Huskers open the season 10 days against South Alabama. Coming up in hour two of Hail Varsity Radio, we got a rewind session with Coach Ron Brown right after the hour. A little later, we go on a recruiting recon mission with Greg Smith, and then we're going to hope to get Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Gulf Ridge Pro on. You listen to Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in longtime coach and director of player development, I should say, at Nebraska, Ron Brown, with us. Coach, how are you, man? This time of year's always got to make you smile.
Hey, Schmitty. Yeah, love football season. But, you know, nowadays, seems like all year is football season. So, it's extensive. I'm glad that we're into the meat of it now.
There doesn't seem to be an off season, and with your job and role when it comes to mentoring student athletes off the field, there's really no downtime, Coach. And what have you noticed from this team and your interactions with them from an attitude and the mentality standpoint?
The needle is moving, Schmitty, and I think what I mean by that is that, you know, maturity takes place in stages. It's not just a one major leap jump, and there is a steady growth I see in a really good direction. The development of their athletic skills through the weight room and Zach and Dave Ellis and the nutrition, you can see the size and stature of our players through, I think, just the nurturing of Coach Frost, you know, just his continual the way that he has a very relaxed yet intense way of helping players to grow, see more of what's out there for them. I feel like it's gone in a really good direction, and you can see the excitement of our players. They're just more in tune with our practice sessions, what is expected, off the field type things are improving. They're continually doing a really good job overall in the classroom. When you start putting a lot of things together, on and off the field, it often turns into greater maximization of your talent on the field. So that's what I'm excited to see, and I clearly see that happening here.
Ron Brown's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, and you mentioned that needle going in the right direction, and you're so right about stages of maturity. And is there anybody that sticks out, either coach or player, that's helped move that transitional process from, all right, you're 18 and you show up on campus, to now maybe you're just a year into your college education and your time on the field, but man, you've got your priorities set. Who's helped to that from a leadership standpoint, be it coach or even peer on that team?
Well, there's a number of players, and I'll kind of reserve myself, because in the length of interview time that we have, would probably be remiss. And I'll miss out on some guys. I'll just go back to our head coach, Scott Frost. I think that he has really done a great job of transitioning this football team from one level to another level in that slow process of maturity. But he's done it in a way without a my way or the highway mentality of banging his fist down on desk. He can be very intense. And he's a tenacious competitor, and demands a lot from the players, but he's very smooth. He knows how to speak to people. And, I think the other thing that I've really been impressed with him on, and again, I remember him obviously as a player way back in the day, when I was, one of his coaches, and now having the opportunity to work for him, I see how he handles the ups and downs, particularly last year, the ups and downs of a season that was a little bit tumultuous in the terms of wins and losses, starting off with that first game, the storm situation. But then you have other storms in life as well. You get your outside linebacker coach, Javon DeWitt, with a difficult episode of illness. And how do you handle that as a young coach and so forth? And just the way this football team has kind of pulled around those kinds of trials and have started to really celebrate some great successes that we see as well. And then you start to see the resiliency, that rubber ball, what I call rubber ball resiliency. When you squeeze a rubber ball, it pops back into shape, unlike a piece of paper who folds under the pressure. So I'm starting to see some things that I think will translate into maximizing our God-given talent, which gives us the best chance to win football games.
Ron Brown with us, a few minutes here, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, have you had a chance to touch on the expectation, the buzz, the pats on the back with this football team, with your role on the team? Because I mean, you guys lived it when you were coaching here at different points of your career. I mean, Nebraska's always expected to do dot, 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 and the program's trying to climb back that direction. How have you seen the expectations dealt with to this point? I know we're just five or six practices in.
Well, one of the things I've talked to a lot of the players about, and a number of people around this program, is the area of humility. What does it mean to live a humble life? Because a proud look, either if you're proud in a negative sense, Schmitty, either you humble yourself or God will humble you, And you find that in this profession, it very quickly you realize that, man, you can find yourself in these humbling situations faster than a lamb can shake its tail. So you really cannot make it about yourself. This is not only a team game, but this team game was I think, is given access to us by the Lord himself to take these abilities and showcase them and help inspire a whole state and a whole nation. So I think the key thing is humility. No matter what they rank us, no matter how they've rated us preseason and so forth, not only every game is important, every snap in practice is important. Every good night's sleep is important. Every off-the-field decision is important. Every math exam is important. And when you start to do that and when you start to pull for each other in that process and love really becomes the major theme of this program, you start to see some great translation in a variety of areas, including wins and losses. Not a guarantee, but you start to see that. I've always remembered Coach Osborne and the way this program was built by him and Devaney, which was based on love. It wasn't based on hate. It wasn't based on pride. It wasn't based on, you know, there are a few showcase players and the rest of everyone else is just kind of scrubs. It's that every single guy has a major role, no matter where you are on the depth chart. And I'm really seeing that kind of a scenario here with this football team now.
Ron Brown's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. So it sounds like, I mean, I hear the day by day, and I see the prove it slash earn it as kind of the mantra, but it's that does kind of make you stop and look at it as a step by step, not a macro thing, right?
Yeah, and you know, let's face it, let's just be real, Schmitty, about, you know, Nick Saban, he probably teaches the same stuff. These great coaches, you know, around the country, Dabo out of Clemson, there's a lot of great things that these coaches are learning and teaching and building, you know, team among the whole process of unselfishness and humility, et cetera. The question isn't what only is being taught and what's being said. It's now, how is it responded to? And your response mechanism really determines the trajectory of how far you go in that area. So I can sit here and say, yeah, I think we're a team, well, I think we're unselfish, but what happens when a scenario takes place on the team where unselfishness has to be displayed when you're tempted rather to be very selfish? What happens when you're in the middle of a game and you really feel like, you know what, I can take a playoff on this play and I'm just going to take a calculated loaf, and you decide to kind of let up on that play when you needed to be going 100 miles an hour because you are going to be the only guy that can make that tackle. I mean, what happens in real live time in terms of the principles that you're teaching in slow time? So we're teaching in slow time, hey, here's what we say, this is what we mean. Now, how is it responded to in fast live time? That's going to be the key. Are you a doer of the word, so to speak?
Ron Brown's with us, Hale Varsity Radio, Director of Player Development, year two for Nebraska football as camp rolls forward. Coach, I got to ask you, and I know that there's 12 games on the regular season schedule, but a lot of hype and buzz, back to those words again, with the trip out to Boulder. What do you remember about the Colorado-Nebraska matchups?
Very intense, you know, and I thought very different approaches, really, from the two head coaches during the era of time that I experienced it with Coach Osborne with us, obviously, versus Coach McCartney with Colorado. Two great coaches, you know, slightly different philosophies and ways that they motivated players. It was an intense rivalry, without a doubt. The fans out there in Boulder, Colorado, understood that. Our fans understood that. It was always a, you know, even though their stadium's not as large as ours, it could be loud and crazy and noisy. We had some barn burner games out there. You know, some tough ones that we lost, some tough close games that we won. We even had a tie in 1991. We've had it all out there. And we've played in the day, we've played in the early part of the day, we've played in the evening. It's been for the league title. At times it hasn't had always a major league championship atmosphere to it. But by and large, it's always a great game, and I think it's a great showdown between not only two teams but two states.
You mentioned 91. I remember where I was watching that, and I'm glad I was watching it in front of a fireplace.
Yeah.
Because, well, it was like 20 below. Were you on the were you on the sidelines, or were you in the booth for that one?
Man, I wish I was in the booth on that night. I was on the sideline, and I remember Turner Gill and I, we're both cold-blooded anyhow. You know, we had everything we owned on that night, each of us, and we both look like the Michelin tire man on the side on the sideline. We were bundled up with clothes. Coach Osborne was trying to tough it out. He had a little like a little windbreaker jacket on, and his skin was beet red. If you looked at Coach Osborne that night, that would have been the definition of Go Big Red. He was as red as a beet out there with that cold weather whipping up on him. But at any rate, it was a great game. I think it was a 19-19 game. We had an extra point blocked, and Greg Beeker picked it up and ran it a gazillion miles for the 2-point conversion that sent the game into a tie. It was before we had overtime, so that was a crazy game, but fun experiences, you know, and that was one of them.
Well, and based on the aim that game, and this is with the student section and snowballs, I mean, it's a good thing you guys were bundled up, right?
Yeah, there were a lot of things coming out of that, out of the stands in the area of snowballs. But I know Coach Osborne, if I remember right, wanted that game to be played during the day because he was concerned of the frigid temperature. I believe that the actual temperature, Schmitty, was like -7 or something like that. And what I remember, now again, I could be wrong, it was a long time ago, it didn't seem like there was much wind. It was just flat-out cold. ESPN wanted it for the night game, and ironically, in that game, we had to throw the ball in that game to really end up in a tie. We hit John Bostic on a deep throw, and we hit Johnny Mitchell a few times on some big throws. So there had to be, you know, we're a running football team, but we had to throw it to win it or to at least tie that year, and our kids did a nice job throwing and catching in frigid temperatures.
Well, Keith and McCant was phenomenal that game on bootlegs, and I remember your guy Bostic getting open, and I think Johnny Mitchell was just lethal across the middle, and Derek Brown had a monster game too behind Will Shields.
Right. Yeah, you know, again, it doesn't matter what the weather is. Now, obviously, at the second game of the season, we're not expecting anything like that. But it could be, who knows what it'll be. It could be wind, it could be rain. You know, our football team, if it's going to really maximize its potential, has to be an all-weather team, a circumstance-free team versus a circumstance-based team. And what I mean by that, Schmitty, is that if you're a team that relies on circumstances of weather and, you know, positioning and the depth charts and the rankings and all of that to get you motivated to play your best, that's not a good scenario. Circumstances change. And so you have to be a circumstance-free team. So no matter what the weather, no matter if it's sunny and 70 or windy and a monsoon and you're playing the game, you got to play the game to the best of your ability. And so hopefully we have guys who are mentally tough that will show up no matter what.
Coach, I'll let you go after this, and you just hit on it, the toughness factor, and I found that pretty poignant from Coach Frost at his pre-camp press conference, wanting to see that toughness every day in practice and every Saturday in the fall, not just mentally, but the physical toughness. Your teams in the 80s and 90s and 2000s were always pretty tough.
Well, the reason we were, Schmitty, is because we had a tremendous competitive spirit in practice. I mean, the toughest portion of the week for us in those years were the practices. They were extremely intense, and there was a high level of competition, not only for individual positions, but to maximize the ability, and it was demanded. And I think Coach Frost sees that on our football team now. They're competing. They're battling one another. And Saturday for us was always a fun day. It was a culmination of the real tough competition that we experienced on Tuesday and Wednesday. And that's what we want around here as well. When you have great intra-squad competition, it gives you the best chance to outflow all of your ability and talent on Saturdays.
Ron Brown with us, Hale Varsity. Coach, you take care. Thanks for a few minutes today.
You bet, Schmitty. God bless. Thanks for having me.
It was a good little rewind session from Ron Brown and Chris Schmidt here on Hale Varsity Radio on a Wednesday. When we come back, we're going to have Hale Varsity's Greg Smith for a little recruiting recon.
And now,
back to Hale Varsity Radio.
We're back, Hale Varsity Radio on a Wednesday. Coming up next, we're going to be bringing on Hale Varsity's own Greg Smith. Greg, does a lot in the recruiting segment for Hail Varsity. Greg, the commitment drought is over. How are you feeling today, dude?
Hey, I'm feeling pretty good, man. I can't complain. We got a lot cooler weather today than it was yesterday. Plus, Nebraska's back on the board, another commitment, so you can't complain about that.
Well, what can you tell us about Savion Morrison? He's a 3-star from Tulsa, Oklahoma. People can find that online. But how is he going to fit into this Scott Frost offense?
Yeah, it turns out that he's a really good fit for this offense, and that's actually one of the leading factors as to what sold him kind of on coming to Nebraska. As you know, I talked to him after his official visit, and he said that he loved the offense. He loved the versatility that the running backs got to play with within the offense. They're not just straight running backs. They can also line up in the slot. They can motion out, catch passes, do everything that you've seen running backs traditionally do in a Scott Frost up-tempo offense. And in talking to his high school coach a couple of days before Savion made this announcement today, he says that that type of offense really fits Savion's game well, that he has really good hands, he runs the ball well as well, but that he's a complete back and he'll fit into this offense really well.
Now, for any Husker fans out there who may be listening who haven't watched the Huddle highlights or any film of Savion, are there any players on the Nebraska roster that he is comparable to?
I would say that he's more in the Ronald Tompkins kind of do-everything mode. He's not as fast as Ramir Johnson, and he's not as dynamic as Wandale Robinson. You're not going to find a guy like that very often. Like, those guys don't come around all the time, every cycle. But I would say he's more of a Ronald Tompkins, do-everything back, and he's got enough size, but he's not huge. But he's also definitely not small as well. I think that he's a guy that just does everything pretty well, which would translate well to the college game and to Big Ten football.
Recruiting analyst for Hail Varsity, Greg Smith's with us on Hail Varsity Radio. You can find him on Twitter at GregSmithHV. You can follow Hail Varsity at Hail Varsity, and you can follow me at Herbal Essences. Greg, you just released your Greg's guys for the month, and there's a lot of linebackers on the list, but I want to start with the number one guy, JUCO wide receiver Omar Manning. What can you tell me about him?
Yeah, Omar goes up 6'3", 205, down at Kilgore Community College in Texas. He actually came up for an official visit the same weekend that Savion Morrison actually was in town for his official visit. And by all accounts, he had a really good visit. He's been kind of tough to reach, and JUCO guys are kind of like this sometimes, where they've already been through the process, and they're not necessarily looking for all the additional hoopla and talking to us and all of that, which is totally fine. But that doesn't mean that he didn't have a good time on his visit. But Nebraska is very, very high on this guy, and that's why I have him number one. And plus, I think he's a special talent. I think that he's the kind of guy that we've seen Nebraska bring in JUCO guys here recently, like Jakeem Green, who will probably have an impact right away. Mills, the running back, will also play a lot coming in. I think Manning could be that type of guy at wide receiver should he choose Nebraska.
Now, listen, hearing his measurables, he sounds like more of an outside deep threat type of guy, not the shifty inside. What could he bring to this Nebraska offense?
Yeah, he's definitely that type of guy. He is not the guy that is playing in the slot like a Wandale Robinson or even J.D. Spielman, Jamie Nance, that type of a guy. He is more of that true outside guy, kind of a replacement, if you will, for what Stanley Morgan brought to the table. What Smith did down at UCF for Scott Frost and their offense, that type of a possession, more of a possession-type receiver, but he does have pretty good speed as well. He's not slow by any means.
As you look down the list on your guys for this month, you see a lot of linebackers. One of them that sticks out to me is Caleb McCullough. He just said his official visit to Nebraska. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think he's a very underrated prospect right now, and I'm not sure how you have 211 total tackles during your junior season of high school, and you're not rated a little bit higher.
Wow.
He's a strong 3-star, right? He's a strong 3-star, but he's been continuing to climb up the rankings, and you kind of see why when you hear about his numbers and also watch his film. He's a guy that runs very well. He's about 6'3", 215 right now, so he's going to have to add weight at the college level, but he definitely has the frame to be able to do so, and he could be a real steal if Nebraska can pull him out of California.
Nebraska did get a couple inside linebackers last year in Jackson Hanna and then Nick Henrich from Burke, but you still have a lot of linebackers on this list on your guys. Is that still a position in need for the Huskers?
Yeah, I think it's to me, linebacker and wide receiver are the two big needs. And I actually think linebacker has pulled ahead of what's been happening at wide receiver, mostly because of how the guys that are already on campus in Lincoln have performed this fall camp, and the guys that got here early during the spring, too. I think you have a lot of confidence because they have a lot of guys at wide receiver on the roster. It's just whether or not they're going to step up. So they'll probably take one more wide out in addition to Will Nixon and Xavier Betts, who are already in the class. The linebacker, to me, is the number one need, and they need both inside and outside linebackers. And that's not to say that Nebraska doesn't have anyone on the roster that can fill those roles, because they do have guys, but they need more numbers. Like, they just don't have enough numbers. When you look at, you know, scholarship inside linebackers, for example, that are healthy right now, you just have a couple, right? Just three guys, and even Will Honus is coming off of an injury, so you just need to have more bodies at that linebacker spot.
Now, one of the position groups that seems to be have a lot of talent right now is the running back position group, and now with the addition of Savion Morrison, there's a little more talent. The Huskers are still going after a guy in Marvin Scott III. Why would the Huskers keep going after him? Is there still position, or is there still need in the running back room for a guy like Marvin Scott?
Yes, there's definitely still a need at running back, and they're going to continue to load up that position. And it's for a couple of reasons. One, running backs in this offense, you play a lot of them. You're going to end up going through a bunch of them. Plus, you have to guard yourself against injuries. You don't want to have a big drop-off when your first or second guy goes down, so you need to continuously load up your room. Plus, Ryan Held is not shy, the running backs coach, about letting everybody know that there's a standard at Nebraska of what running back has always traditionally been around here, and they need to get it back to what that used to be. And he's going to continue to recruit accordingly until he gets it to that level. And I think that's the way you should approach it at a place like this at that position.
An interesting thing I saw today was that Coffeyville Junior College is practicing in Nebraska today at the stadium. Is there any recruiting going on there, or was that just they happened to be in town and needed a place to practice?
So from what I've been able to gather so far, it wasn't a recruiting visit necessarily. It was more that they needed a place to practice on the way to playing a game against Iowa Western tomorrow night in Council Bluffs. They play out there in Council Bluffs tomorrow at 6 p.m., I believe. So I don't think that it was a recruiting visit. And I'm not sure actually right now if there's anyone on Coffeyville in Nebraska is recruiting for this cycle, maybe for next cycle. I'll have to dig a little bit more on that. But they do play at Iowa Western tomorrow.
Before we get on to some of the current guys on the team, I want to get your thoughts really quick on some in-state talent coming up in 2020. The Nebraska prep season starts next week. Who are guys that, with good performance this year, may be looking to earn an offer from the Huskers?
Yeah, so there's a couple of guys that jump out right away. There's Lincoln Southeast Isaac Gifford, who could garner an offer, plays defensive back, could also continue to grow like his brother did to be an outside linebacker, because that's kind of the same path that Luke took during his time in high school. And then you have Johnson Brock, athlete Ty Hahn is another guy that, man, he's been testing off the charts over the summer. Had a great summer in the camp circuit, did a really nice job. So we'll have to see how his season goes to see if either of those guys end up getting an offer. I don't know if they would come early in the season necessarily. If either of them get offers, I think that they'd come later in the season once we see how some more things shake out for the Huskers this cycle.
Now, I want to talk about a guy that was an in-state talent that you just wrote an article on HailVarsity.com about, and that's Chris Hickman. What's his progress like coming into the season? I know there's Kurt Raftel, who's made some strides, Austin Allen's made some strides, and you got Jack Stoll, your starter. He seems to kind of be more of a fringe guy. Is he looking to redshirt this year? Is there any chance he gets playtime? Just what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I can't really see a scenario in which Chris Hickman doesn't redshirt this year. I think he'll definitely redshirt, and I think that's always been the plan all along. And in talking to Sean Beckman for that story, everyone recognizes that he needs to add weight. You know, it's always funny because when you look at, like, a guy's recruiting profile and see what a guy's weight is versus what they actually came in at. And in that story, Sean Beckman is quoted as saying that Chris Hickman came in at about 180, 185 pounds. Now, he says now he's up to
about 205, 210, depending on where, you know, how much they've worked him in practice and body weight and all of that. So he's definitely been working since, because he early enrolled and got here last January. So he's definitely been working out, been eating. There's a big focus there to get him eating and working out all of the time, putting the right stuff in his body. But Beckman was pleased with his progress when it came to also learning the offense. He said he thought he was a little bit further ahead on that than he thought he would be. So the early signs are positive. There's just not a need for him to rush into action at this point in his career. But I think he could end up being a really good player down the road, is what they recruited him for.
Once he is into the fold, what could he bring to this offense that Nebraska currently does not have?
Oh, he'd be the kind of that stretch tight end. Think Jordan Akins when he was down at UCF and the way that they utilized him to stretch the field, especially because they had so many weapons on the perimeter that it created mismatch nightmares for the defense. And that's exactly what they and end up coming in and doing. And I think that that's the type of potential he has. And I think he's going to be a really good player by the time he leaves here.
Only about a minute left, but I asked Derek Peterson about this earlier, and I want to get your thoughts, too, on the new Nebraska alternate uniforms, the black shirt jerseys. Do you have any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm totally good with them. Like, I like the jerseys. I've always been a fan of them leaning into the black shirt tradition and using black jerseys. So long as we can read the numbers on the back, I'm perfectly fine with them.
Do you think this is going to be a jersey that's going to be good to come back from years down the road? There's speculation that this jersey wasn't designed to just play in one game. This is going to be coming back year after year. Is that something you're okay with?
Yeah, I would totally be fine with that, especially if you think about it, the defense gets better and they win some more games. I think that that'll be even cooler to be able to do something like that and roll it out. I think people would be really excited for it.
And Derek said that he would like to see Nebraska wear these for the Ohio State game. He thinks it would give them a big spark, especially if that's a night game in Lincoln. If you take Ohio State out of the options, which games do you think Nebraska would wear the jerseys for this year?
Oh man, if I take Ohio State out, I'm trying to think of maybe you go completely opposite of what you normally do and wear them for the finale against Iowa. Maybe you do something like that, and then hopefully that Iowa-Nebraska game is one that's for the Big Ten West title, and you roll those jerseys out for that and get a little bit extra juice in the stadium that day. How about that?
I think that'd be pretty good. Greg, thanks for joining us today on the show. Again, find him, follow him on Twitter at GregSmithHV. Greg, thanks for the time.
Hey, thanks as always, man. You have a good one.
You too. There he is, Greg Smith. When we come back on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, we're going to do another little rewind segment. We had the Jock Doc, Dr. Brandon Seifert, with us during the first hour, so we're going to come back and we're going to rewind with Gary DiNardo. He had some good stuff whenever he was in Lincoln on the BTN bus tour. You're not going to miss it. Stick around. You're listening to Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio. Big Ten bus tour is roared through Lincoln. We welcome in the coach, Jerry DiNardo, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach, thanks for squeezing us in today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you?
Doing well. So, what was your takeaway from Lincoln today? Let's start with what maybe changed your mind about Nebraska. Earlier this summer, you thought Nebraska, maybe a little too much hype around him. What do you feel? What do you think now after seeing him today?
Yeah, I guess what I was saying was that, you know, I think I'm in the same boat as a lot of people. I'm very confident that Coach Frost is going to get this thing going the way it used to be going in at Nebraska during the great year. So I'm confident that that's going to happen. I just didn't think that they would be not competitive, but I didn't think they would win the Big Ten West this year. After watching practice and watching and looking and seeing how they've totally changed the physical presence, I mean, they're so much bigger and stronger after 1 year. And after seeing some schools, I haven't seen Iowa, who I expect to be a very good team. I haven't seen Northwestern, who will be a good team. I haven't seen Illinois, that'll be an improved team. I could see why people say that, you know, Nebraska could win the West. I'm not predicting that they're going to win the West, but at least now people that have picked them to win the West, I get it. And during media days, I really didn't get it. I get Scott Frost. I don't have any doubt that he's going to do a great job. I didn't think they would progress this fast. I've changed my mind. I think they're progressing faster than I thought.
What's that say to you about how quickly they've progressed when it comes to Coach Duvall and strength and conditioning? I mean, you've taken over different programs where you had to get guys up to the level you wanted them to be at. Nebraska's transition here, their jump from a year ago. I mean, are you shocked? Are you surprised by it?
Well, it's two things, right? It's developing, and Coach Duvall's got a great reputation, and I could see why. It's developing the players that you inherited from the previous staff, and it's also recruiting. And nowadays, Chris, it's also who was in the transfer portal,
right,
and who you could get in here almost like an NFL roster as a free agent to try to help. And I think they've done all three of those things. They've obviously trained during the offseason. They've recruited well. And they've also gone to the transfer portal, found some guys that can help them, and they're certainly helping them. Now, you know, there's probably a depth problem at outside linebacker, which, you know, is a serious issue in this type of scheme. And I think they would maybe like some bigger, taller, faster guys on the perimeter, especially in the spread offense, as wide receivers, and I think they'll work in that direction in recruiting.
Coach, did you get to spend any time with Greg Austin? I know you're an offensive line guy. Were there any impressions about Nebraska's O-line? Yes, we mentioned size, but from a group standpoint, what did you think of the O-line group you had a chance to see?
Yeah, much bigger than I remember them from last year. I spent a lot of time with Greg Austin. I did a mic'd up that'll be on the big show tonight. And so I had a chance to visit with him, but I visited with Coach Austin a lot before practice, and, you know, we talked about offensive line play. You know, I mean, I know it's going to get better, but I would say this. A year ago when we came, and Howard and I always walk around together, we said, you know, it just doesn't look like Nebraska. And then this year we came and we said, this is what we all thought Nebraska should look like. And yet, it's just the second year, and they're just going to get better. They're obviously not going to get worse. You never stay the same. So the offensive line was big, physical. I'm sure there's some guys that need work. I'm sure I didn't study it the way Coach Austin does and the way Coach Frost does. And I'm sure there's a lot of work to be done there, but it was impressive just coming and watching one practice.
What did you sense from Coach Frost when you interacted with him?
Just like he was when he was a player. He's just confident. He believes in the plan. He's a teacher. He's got a great presence about him. You know, I just think the world of him. You know, obviously he's a great fit here. I mean, that doesn't need to be said. But I do think this, Chris. I loved Ara Parsegian, and I played for Ara. And anyone that has been a player on a team, you always respect your coach. You know, sometimes they're hard on you, sometimes they're not. The thing about Ara, I wanted to be in his presence, and I think that's the way the Nebraska players feel about Scott. Fun to be around. Yeah, he's going to get on my butt. Yeah, he's going to tell me when I've done some things wrong. But when you want to be around your leader, I don't think there's any greater compliment, and I think that's what Scott is with his team.
Coach, did Jakeem Green make an impression on you at all? The new JUCO defensive lineman, did you see much of him, or did you just stay with offense?
Well, I tried to go back and forth, but, you know, honestly, Chris, I'd just be making it up if I saw that. But the word is that he's done really well, and he's off to a good camp and all that, and I think Howard probably watched him a little closer than I did. But I hate to make stuff up, but I looked at him a little, but I can't really say I evaluated him.
Okay, let's talk polls here before I let you go. And Jerry DiNardo's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Big Ten Network, at Jerry DiNardo on Twitter. Coach and the bus crew, Dave Revson, Howard Griffith, in camp today, able to see Nebraska and do their Big Ten bus tour. When you look at the rankings here, preseason number 24, Nebraska, a thought on that. Overall, 7 Big Ten teams. I mean, is that enough proof right now by the AP that maybe the Big Ten has moved ahead of the SEC for best league? Maybe not best team, obviously, but best league?
Well, you know, a couple things come to mind. You know, Nebraska being ranked as high as they are right now after only winning 4 games. I think that's, again, I think this speaks to Scott Frost and the confidence and enthusiasm that he's brought. I don't think, Chris, there's a great team in the conference right now. You know, I think Ohio State has the better teams. And when you say so far, and I haven't been to Iowa, Illinois, sure, and Northwestern, but when you talk about, is there a college football playoff team in the Big Ten? I'm not sure there is at this time. Now, that could all change, mm-hmm, but I think it's deeper than it's been. I've said this for a couple months. I think the West, in the Big Ten West, may be the most balanced, not the best, but the most balanced division in college football. And I'm going to tell you about the East. You know, you eliminate Illinois, Indiana, rather, Maryland, and Rutgers. Those four, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Penn State, they are going to beat the tar out of one another. Because of those four, there's nobody that has separated themselves. Some are better in this area, some are better in the other area. So I see nobody going undefeated in the East within the division, and I don't see anybody going undefeated in the West when they play divisional games. So I think both divisions are not going to – neither division is going to have an undefeated team within their divisional play.
Coach, about 30 seconds. Did Adrian Martinez, what did he show you today?
You know, I think his rep is really deserved. He's mature beyond his years. He sat on the set with us. He answered questions. He just seems so reasonable and so sensible. My guess is, I mean, I didn't know Scott Frost when he was in college. I'm guessing Scott Frost had the same attitude, the same body language, the same way he dealt with the media and everything else, expectations, as Adrian does. So I'm guessing the two peas in a pod, and that's probably why they like each other so much and work together so well.
Jared Innardo, Big Ten Bus Tour, Big Ten Network Coach, we appreciate you much. Thanks so much for jumping on today.
You bet, Chris. Take care.
Thanks. All right, there he is, Coach DiNardo. We'll wind down a Monday. Good to hear from him, as it was Big Ten Network Day with Nebraska. Good insight from Coach DiNardo. We'll say goodbye next to Hail Varsity Radio.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Elijah Herbel back here filling in for Chris Schmidt as we wind down this show on a Wednesday. Thoughts and prayers out to Chris and his family. I want to be the first to say that. Good stuff today from Dr. Petey, Derek Peterson. You can find him on Twitter at Dr. PDHV, in an awesome interview as we did some recruiting recon with Greg Smith. You can find him on Twitter at GregSmithHV. Good stuff. All that's going to be posted on the ESPN Lincoln Twitter and tonight on HailVarsity.com, as well as on the Apple podcast page. Really good stuff today from them. I want to wind down the show today with some quotes that we had from after the practice that the Huskers conducted this morning. Again, 10 days until the first game. Huskers shifting from camp mode into game mode. Offensive coordinator Walters had some good stuff to say about the wide receiver corps. Says he's looking for 7 or 8 guys to be able to fill in and go to work on Saturdays. Again, here's Coach Walters.
Playing a lot of guys at different positions because we want that depth. You know, this past week we had a couple scrimmages, a couple game day simulations, just to see how guys react. So definitely guys are kind of separating themselves. But I feel good about the depth that we have. I feel good about the guys understanding the offense so that we can move guys around. J.D. Spielman doesn't necessarily always have to play in the slot. He could play outside if we need him. So very pleased with how things are coming and the depth of the group.
Realistically, how many receivers do you think you play?
Yeah, you like to at least be 2 deep, so that gives you, you know, 6. You like to have 6 to 7 guys that you can that you believe in, that, you know, you can put in at any time. One of the focuses this season is playing fast and selling out. So I don't want guys to hold things in and be on cruise control because they're tired. They don't want to get tired. We want guys to go full speed.
Again, that was Coach Walters on the wide receiver room going into the year. And another one of those wide receivers is Cade Warner. He's looking to get some more play time this year. And a good friend of the show, Mitch Sherman, he was on yesterday in his new article released this morning. And it was on Cade Warner as he sat down with Kurt Warner and talked to Kurt about being a dad and having a son kind of defying the odds and playing college football. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, I really recommend getting one. I think it's well worth the money. That's not even a sponsorship. I just think that Mitch Sherman puts out some great stuff for the Huskers, probably some of the best stuff that you get. And he put out another great article today. Before we let you go, I do have one more soundbite I want to play for you. Jack Stoll, after practice today, had some awesome stuff to say, really kind of hyping up the Huskers offense. Jack Stoll, I guess we're calling him now. Just take a listen. I think he said some pretty good stuff in this.
You know, we're confident as an offense. We're going to go out there and ball out. So, you know, whatever everyone else is saying, that's fine. We just know we're walking around with the confidence, the swagger. Like, we're going to go out there and, you know, we're putting up 50, 60 points every single game. And you know, I know that's something we are definitely capable of doing.
50 or 60 points a game, according to tight end Jack Stoll. And imagine that, 50 or 60 points a game. For the Huskers, I can see it against South Alabama. I can see it against some of these other lesser schools, maybe Northern Illinois if we have a good game. But 50, 60 points a game. He believes it, and I guess we'll find out. 10 days from the season, Nebraska takes on South Alabama, 11 a.m. in 10 days. We're so close, Husker fans. We're so close. We're going to be back tomorrow with Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.